As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to The Forum Club, the Lakers podcast from The Athletic. I'm Bill Oram, joined by Jovan Buha, who is fresh off an airplane from Sacramento. Just watched the Lakers lose to the Kings, slip back to 500. And Jovan, I only have one question. I think it's going to be the main thrust of our conversation today. What is going on with Russell Westbrook?
I thought you were going to ask me if I was as cold as ice. I was going to tell you I'm a little chilly, but not quite cold. It's the question of, it's the question of the season. It was the question of the offseason. I just wrote about it last night. I think it I don't know if this is the nadir of Westbrook, you know, of Russ's season, but he is shooting 25% over the last four games. And I think we have seen a difference in his game where he's not turning the ball over as much as he was earlier in the season, at least in this stretch. But there's kind of a passivity to him and a lack of confidence. And there's one possession I highlighted that we asked Frank Vogel about where Austin Reeves drives and has this dump off pass to Russ. And he has like a half second to maybe like three quarters of a second to get a layup attempt up. And he decides not to. And he dribbles the ball out from right under the rim and ends up finding LeBron James for a layup. LeBron, you know, smartly cuts to the basket, gets a layup, and you know, on paper, that's a success. The Lakers scored and Russ got an assist. But if you're kind of looking at the process of it, you know, Russell Westbrook catches the ball under the basket, has a point blank layup, you know, holds the ball, the Kings collapse on him, and then he decides to dribble it out and find LeBron. But like, you just kind of progressively saw that, you know, he only took a few shots in the second half of that game, ended up going 2 for 14. So I think, you know, like you had the whole sound effect thing, which was just
it's called music, hilarious. Like it's a clip from a song. A sound effect is like a cymbal.
Well, crash. Sure. But semantics aside, it was hilarious.
A drum roll.
It was. And at first I thought it was
crickets
just an
chirping.
Intro thing. Sure. It's too wordy to say like a clip from a song. That just doesn't. It's not a sound effect.
Like we just have the nomenclature here matters. Like it's not a sound. They play a lick. They played a lick.
Okay, they played a lick. The lick from the song was designed to troll Westbrook. Unfortunately, I wish this was Westbrook specific, but this is a recent thing from talking to some people that cover the Kings. This has been a recent thing over the past few games that they've been playing with different sound effects to. They pick an opponent pregame and they troll that player. I guess recently one of them was Lauri Markkanen, which is pretty random. But Russ, I mean, it was just so appropriate with the way that he had been struggling entering this game, you know, over the previous three games and kind of just the whole season he's had. And it was like it felt like every miss, it was growing louder and louder and just the weight of the moment. We're now 42 games into the season and I feel like we've had the same conversation about Russ this entire time. And like, there's been some progress. He had that good stretch from end of November through end of December. But he has not lived up to the billing of being a third star. He is at this point a role player who has had some effective moments, but he's a role player that's making over $40 million. And as long as he continues to produce at that level, the Lakers are not going to win a championship. They're not going to contend for a championship. And it's not pretty. So, I mean, I don't mean to be harsh, but we have a 40-game sample at this point of Russ and his limitations, and it's exactly what we thought. And I think for the Lakers, it's been pretty frustrating.
You know, so Russ is 8 of 40 from the field over his last three games. You know, and like you said, you know, turnovers have been down, only 4 turnovers in his last 4 games, which actually comes off on the heels of that 9 turnover game he had against Minnesota. You know, it does feel like there is like an overcorrection on Russ, where, you know, he had 4 turnovers, he had 4 straight triple doubles starting on Christmas, and then since then, he's become, you know, pretty ineffective since then. And it really does swing dramatically back and forth. And the Lakers have this hope that, you know, you kind of ride those waves until the playoffs. And then in the playoffs, you have, you know, 3 guys that, you know, opposing teams absolutely have to guard, you know, can't give up the drive to Russ. And then you can't come off of LeBron, AD, maybe Malik's in that lineup. And, you know, that in theory is pretty dynamic. You do understand how the Lakers talked themselves into Russell Westbrook, even though I think most of us were like, that's maybe a bigger gamble than you need to take last summer. But I don't know where they go from here. You know, the Lakers have figured something out with LeBron James playing at center. Like, that seems to be something that is working for them right now. I think, you know, once you get Anthony Davis back, he's the 5. That's kind of what we envisioned at the beginning of the year. You know, maybe we give them we allow a little time to see what that looks like. We saw it a little bit in November, but that was before the Lakers were at full strength. They were still playing Kent Bazemore. Now they have Trevor Ariza. They have Austin Reeves playing at a really high level. He had a great game in Sacramento, hit some big shots. And they'll theoretically have Kendrick Nunn back at some point. So we'll at least see the group as the Lakers imagined it. But I don't look at this Lakers team and say they are a Trevor Ariza away or a Kendrick Nunn away from being a championship team. I mean, you put Kendrick Nunn on, you know, your average 21-21 team, and that team finishes 41-41. He's a difference-making player, but he doesn't elevate you to the next tier. So where the Lakers go from here with Westbrook, I don't really know the answer, because they've backed themselves into a corner. He's not a tradable player. I know there is some, you know, some chatter about whether or not the Lakers could move him. You know, that is not feasible in my mind. I don't see a landing spot. I don't think any other team is willing to take on the contract or the baggage. And the Lakers, you know, used up all their tradable assets to get Russ. So they, you know, not only did they, you know, take a gamble on him, but it was a gamble that they then were completely locked into. I don't know where they go from here. And I don't know that they can salvage this over the next, you know, few months, and then also next season, because this does feel like kind of a doomed marriage that the Lakers are kind of stuck riding out until at least next season. But what are you gonna do, buy him out next year after the trade deadline, trade him at the trade deadline for some assets? I mean, if anybody wants to take that on, like, it just is not, you know, it's not a recipe for winning right now with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And I don't really see a path forward. I don't really know if there is a way that you can maximize Russ at this point. You know, you go back to early in the season, our colleague Sam Amick wrote about potentially bringing Russ off the bench. That's not a conversation that, you know, has been had a lot since then. You know, maybe that makes sense in theory, but you're also dealing with a player who, you know, is a first ballot Hall of Famer, has been an All-Star 10 or 11 times in his career. I don't know how Russell Westbrook would respond, to something like that, even if it schematically makes sense. And does it make enough of a difference on the floor to risk losing him and the good things he does provide? Because, you know, while he's not a, you know, maybe he's not the perfect player, you don't want him to just disappear because he, you know, carries a significant portion of the load for the Lakers. So you're right. It's a conversation we've been having. But do you see any path, you know, forward? Do you think that the small ball, you know, lineup that the Lakers have committed to offers any hope with Westbrook? Or is this, and listen, like, I'm a fairly skeptical person in general. Like, I see a team, you know, go 500 through the first 42 games. I don't see, you know, a real path to them being, you know, 10, 15 games over 500 over the last 40. Am I wrong? Where are you at on this?
I think the biggest point of optimism for me at this point is how bad the West has been. And I really think aside from the top four of Golden State, Phoenix, Memphis now, who's up to three, and Utah, like, I think the Lakers can beat any of those other teams. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if Denver beat them in the first round, if Dallas, if the Clippers get healthy, get Paul George and Kawhi back, like, sure, those teams can beat the Lakers in the first round. I wouldn't be, like, shocked, but I also wouldn't be shocked if the Lakers beat them. And it's just, hey, they have LeBron and AD, and that's hard to play against in a seven-game series. Those top four, I think, have distanced themselves. I think even Memphis, who I think it's taken a while for people to really view them as a top four team in the West, but like they've proven themselves, and they've proven themselves against the Lakers. But I would say, I guess, the rest of the West being so meh gives me optimism of, like, if the Lakers can, you know, get AD back within the next week or two, because Friday is the 4-week mark, and start to make some noise even with a tougher schedule, like, they can get into the 5 seed, you know, 5-6 range, and I think potentially, you know, make the second round depending on the matchup.
But listen to what you're saying, and that is a monumental failure from a team management standpoint. This team won the championship 2 years ago. Okay, and I'm not saying that last year that they should have just kept that group, like, completely intact, but they had a recipe that worked 2 years ago. They had a recipe that worked 2 years ago, and here they've managed to somehow get worse each year since, and also back themselves into even more of a corner where they have less flexibility to rebuild the team. So they have really failed on two counts since the 2020 title team. And the idea that you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and that you then go all in for a third superstar, and that team's going to get to the second round, that's not good enough. That's not good enough for what you are starting with. It's like being born on third base and getting thrown out at second. Like, it doesn't even make sense. You know, the Westbrook trade, unless something changes,
it never made sense.
It was a miscalculation, and it was a miscalculation on multiple levels, because Russell Westbrook as a player, you know, listen, he's easy to, there are certainly mockable qualities to his game, but if you had Russell Westbrook at $10 million, we're not having this conversation, because Russell Westbrook at $10 million, you also have KCP and Alex Caruso on the team. You know, you're not trading first round picks. You know, the Lakers are backed into a corner now where, you know, he's taking up, you know, a third of their total cap space. You know, just by virtue of being on the team, they can't go sign anybody for more than the mid-level exception in any given summer. And that makes him a real problem. And that's what the Lakers should have realized when they were considering bringing him on. You only do that to yourself. You only hamstring yourself like that if it means you're going to win a championship, or you're going to be in a great position to win a championship. And I don't think that anyone really looked at this and said, the Lakers have distanced themselves from the field in the West. Now, what are they right now, Jovan? 7th? 8th in the West? I don't think anybody saw that either.
I think they're 7th.
I don't think anybody saw that either. And you can point to the injuries to AD and LeBron, to the issues their depth have endured.
Tied for 7th.
Yeah. I think I probably had them in at 2nd in the West coming into the year, just believing in the talent and the spacing around LeBron and Russ, which really has been up and down this year. It hasn't been as good as we kind of thought it looked on paper. But, like, I still didn't think this was a team that was going to get over the hump. Maybe could get to the finals with some luck, but I didn't see getting past, you know, those top teams in the East even. So to me, it was a big gamble to get kind of close to being a title team, but not getting all the way there. Whereas, you know, what they did, what's proving to be, is this massive move, this massive commitment that locks you into place, and you're not even close to a title. I mean, you're saying, I think they could be a second round team. That's a complete failure, and it's essentially dereliction of duty by the front office if you're going to have the kind of talent to start with that you have in LeBron and Anthony Davis, and then in successive years surround them with players who you know, make the finished product worse. Do I think the Lakers should have stuck with the exact roster from 2020? No, they couldn't have. I mean, Rondo was going to leave. They needed another ball handler next to LeBron. The Schroeder deal made sense. But the failure there is not getting anything for Schroeder before he leaves. You lost a first-round pick and Danny Green, and Schroeder leaves as an unrestricted free agent for the mid-level. You bring in Montrezl Harrell, a guy who, you know, was off the Sixth Man of the Year award, but had been played off the floor in the playoffs, and, you know, doesn't play in the playoffs for you. You get drawn in by the allure of Marc Gasol, only to sour on him quickly. Bring in a replacement that's even worse, and all the while, you know, the bigs that you had won a championship with, JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, you know, are basically gone on contracts that you could have easily afforded. So last year, that's how they set themselves back. And then you have a complete overreaction to a first-round exit when you didn't need a third superstar. LeBron might think he needed a third superstar. What you needed was better balance. And you needed your $9 million player to be playable in the playoffs, speaking of Montrezl Harrell. You need to be smarter with how you built the team. And listen, I liked what the Lakers did after the Westbrook acquisition. I thought they did well with their minimums. I liked the Kendrick Nunn signing for what it was. I didn't like them letting Alex Caruso go, something I think has proven to be a mistake. But, you know, once you make the Westbrook trade, okay, I like Ariza. I like Malik Monk. I like Ellington. Bringing Dwight back makes sense. But the constant, you know, rearranging of strategy and priorities just doesn't make sense when you consider that the Lakers had something that worked. So that's one.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, we are in the middle of January. The trade deadline is a month away. We've talked about this before. We know what the Lakers have to work with. Russell Westbrook is not getting traded. Do the Lakers make a move, and if so, do you have an idea of what it would be? Are you drinking any of the Kool-Aid on a Jeremy Grant or Miles Turner deal? Do you think the Talen Horton Tucker Kendrick Nunn package is getting you an impact player? How willing are you to include the 27 pick to get an impact player? Let's talk trade deadline.
So I just did a mock trade with James Edwards, the third, our Pistons beat writer, and he asked me for a hypothetical Jeremy Grant trade. I gave him THT, Kendrick Nunn, Kent Bazemore, and the 2027 first-round pick. And I kind of hedged with the pick, saying that I think the Lakers would obviously try to protect it at a minimum, maybe like a top three or top five protection. The Pistons would obviously try to push back and say, like, you know, we don't even know what we're getting with THT necessarily, and we're giving you a, you know, respectable, you know, two-way starting forward in Jeremy Grant. So
borderline all-star.
I mean, if I'm the Lakers, I'm going all, because I think you've been all in, right? And you might only have, I mean, I know LeBron is continuing to defy Father Time, and like there's no sign of real, you know, slippage from him, but you realistically like maybe have two additional years after this year, if you're even including this year as like a contention year. So like if, you know, to me, Jeremy Grant fits in great with the new identity. He's someone that can play the three, the four or the five. You know, like he can take some of those Stanley Johnson minutes, some of the Melo minutes, some of the Trevor Ariza minutes. He can play next to LeBron and AD. Again, I think he could play some five in some smaller second unit lineups. He gives the team size, length, athleticism. He's grown a lot as a shooter and a scorer, and defensively, he's always been a solid defender. So to me, Jeremy Grant, I think he's a little overrated overall as a player, but given the state of where the Lakers are and what they need, I do think he would fit in seamlessly. I think THT has been so up and down this year, and just ultimately at the end of the day, he is a ball dominant player who cannot shoot. And the Lakers already have two ball dominant players, one of whom cannot shoot in Russell Westbrook. And you've seen Frank kind of get creative recently where he's staggered Russ and THT a lot. And that's fine, but you can only do that so much because, you know, Russ played 38 minutes last night. So are you only playing Talen 10 minutes a night? And then those minutes that Russ and Talen are playing together, it's just, it's not a great fit. And especially if they're both playing with LeBron, like you're just, you know, playing a lot of ball dominant guys who can't necessarily shoot. So I do think Talen is expendable. I think I kind of felt that going back to last summer, which is why I said, you know, I would pick Alex Caruso over Talen if they had to choose. And who knows, you know, if they flip him for Jeremy Grant, Miles Turner, maybe retaining that asset ends up being worth it. And you got a better fitting piece that can maybe push you into the contention conversation, or at least the solid playoff contender conversation, which Lakers currently aren't in. So if I'm the Lakers, I am going after Miles Turner, Jeremy Grant, whatever player is out there that is a tall, long, athletic front court player that can shoot and play multiple positions. There aren't many of those guys out there. The asking price is high, and I think it is going to include Talen Horton-Tucker and the 2027 pick. And if you're the Lakers, you are potentially mortgaging your future because you don't know what your roster is going to look like in 2027, but you are all in. I mean, you have LeBron James is a once in a generation, once ever, you know, player. And if you want to win another championship with him, I think you have to make a move like this, because I think standing pat, they are primed for a first or second round exit with the way everything is headed.
You can only do it if you're getting a true impact player. You can't do it for Jeremy Grant. I agree. But also, if that deal gets the Lakers Jeremy Grant, I would be stunned. Like, that does not move the needle for me at all if I'm Detroit. I mean, Talen Horton-Tucker, as John Hollinger has noted, is only under team control for one more season. So you're essentially getting 18 months of THT. Nobody knows if Kendrick Nunn can play. And there's an option on him anyway, so he's really just about the money. And then you're talking about a pick that's 6 years away, which, you know, could be great. But at the same time, the Lakers have to start valuing draft picks a little bit, because that is one less asset you now have to improve your team meaningfully going forward. You know, they have been so willing to include first rounders to accelerate trade talks that they really have put themselves in a position where they only have this 2027 pick to offer. And 4 or 5 years from now, when they don't have LeBron, they don't have Anthony Davis, they're going to need those picks to make the deals to bring in whoever it is 5 or 6 years from now. Like, those are assets that you need. So to start being willy-nilly with picks that are 5, 6 years down the road, I agree with you. If you have a way to meaningfully, like, become more of a contender this year, you do it. But you don't do it to go get Terrence Ross.
Sure. No, I agree with that.
You've got to be getting a guy who dramatically changes the complexion of your title hopes. And to be honest, there is a gap in what we're talking about. Like, the kind of player the Lakers need to be able to get to include THT and the first is not the kind of player you can get for THT in a first. Because those two things have way more value to the Lakers than they're going to have to almost any other team in the league. So I don't see any of those deals getting done. And I think, you know, the Lakers could do some things around the margins. Obviously, they're going to man the buyout market, whether that's, you know, is Eric Gordon going to be available? You know, some of those other guys in that mix, you know, whether, you know, Gary Harris, Tristan Thompson, you know, those are the kinds of guys who could be on the market. And the Lakers, you know, clear up a roster spot, sign one of those guys, bolster the depth. They are not getting you that much closer to a championship. You know, they're not moving into the starting lineup. One thing I would say about trade pieces and guys who, you know, could be on the move, this is purely speculation on my part, but if I'm any team talking to the Lakers about a package of THT, Kendrick Nunn, and a first round pick, I'm not taking Kent Bazemore as the minimum throw in. I want Austin Reeves. And I don't think the Lakers should trade Austin Reeves. I don't think you should be eager to trade Austin Reeves. But, you know, if you're trying to sweeten a package to get a deal to get a true impact player, you know, that you might have to have some conversations about including him in a trade. As instead of Kent Bazemore or DeAndre Jordan. So that's something to watch too, because, like, you know, when we talk about who the Lakers have, who teams could even potentially be interested in, he's at least more appealing I mean, frankly, Austin Reeves might be more appealing than Taylor Horton Tucker to me right now. He doesn't have the same upside. He doesn't have the same tools, but he's certainly more, he seems more ready right now, frankly, than THT has with his ups and downs. So
I mean, he's been better than THT recently.
Yeah, he has been.
That's not even
as we get closer to the trade deadline. I mean, he was incredible in Sacramento, but as we get closer to the trade deadline, I wouldn't be shocked if you hear that teams are going to, you know, want Austin Reeves included in any of those packages when we're talking about a true impact player like a Jeremy Grant coming back.
To me, the Westbrook trade, although it has always been somewhat misguided and just, again, like if we were, however you wanted to determine a star, and that's just kind of an, you know, an amorphous concept, right? Westbrook was always, like, aside from, I mean, we've said this on this podcast before, aside from maybe Ben Simmons, like, Westbrook was always the worst-fitting star in the NBA alongside LeBron and AD, just because already, like, comparing LeBron and AD to other star duos, they are light on the shooting side. You know, AD has struggled all season from beyond the arc, and even, you know, his jumper has not been as reliable as in years past. And LeBron is posting another career-best shooting season, but he, you know, kind of remember last season he had that really hot start and then tailed off towards the end of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens again, given the workload that he's had to carry on both ends. So, you know, like LeBron and AD, it's not Steph and Clay, right? It's not KD and Kyrie. It's not Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Like they are not 39, 40% 3-point shooters on high volumes of attempts. And maybe LeBron has finally become that, but, you know, that's still kind of TBD. So I think adding a guy like Westbrook, who's shooting 28.8% on threes this season, just never really made sense. And like, I know the Lakers won playing smash mouth basketball, but you know why they also won? Because Anthony Davis shot a career high percentage on jumpers, and KCP and Rajon Rondo and Alex Caruso all shot over 40% in the bubble. And like, from beyond the arc, like they didn't just win because they were huge and really good defensively. They won because they made threes and they spaced the floor and their role players really contributed. And that was kind of the opposite of last season when they really struggled from deep. But I just thought, you know, again, like it never made sense. And I think there's been a revisionist history of like, well, you know, we kind of saw why they did the trade, but like, it's not really working out. It's like, no, that there was really never any, like you had to talk yourself into the Westbrook trade. It wasn't an obvious, like, you know, this is why the Lakers did it. Like, you know, I don't know. And to me, I think the thing that's disappointing is we just continue to have the same conversations with this team. And it's like, okay, we're 10 games in, we're 20 games in, even we're 30 games in.
Because there's one standard. There's one bar by which this team needs to be measured. So Austin Reeves having a nice game in Sacramento, it only matters in the context of, does it get them closer to a championship? And the answer is no, because the anchor that is holding them back is greater than the positives you see around the fringes. So if you can be super in the moment and look at it as, hey, let's just appreciate a few things about the Lakers. I have things I can appreciate about the Lakers. I appreciate Austin Reeves. And that is a story that has brought, has been a pleasant addition to the Lakers' arc this season. But does it matter? Does it fit in with the overwhelming theme of this season, winning a championship? It doesn't right now. You know, he is a player who I think could help the Lakers on a championship run, like, which I think is just an astonishing statement considering where we started with him and the fact that he started the year on a two-way as an undrafted rookie. But the only conversation about the Lakers is, are they in position to win a championship this year? The answer is no. Why not? It's because they made this trade for Russell Westbrook. That is the only thing that matters with the Lakers this year. So we keep having the same conversation because it is the only conversation that matters.
Yeah, and I guess, like, just to add to that, like I you know, I highlighted a couple plays from last night where it's like, I do think overall Russ has progressively played better. Like, he had a really rough start to the season. Those first 2-3 weeks, he was not very good. And he's still had stretches where he's been not very good. But I think overall, he's been a plus. It's just not a plus that, you know, like, he's not been even an Alex Caruso level plus, in my opinion. Like, he, you know, he's helped, right? But he's not helping at $40 million level. And that's the standard at which he's judged. And I think, like, you know, some people might think that's unfair, but hey, that's what he's getting paid. And he was brought in here to be the third guy, and he's not been. He's not been a third star.
Don't even think of it as money, right? People get very sensitive because you say, oh, it's $40 million and it's money, and, like, you know, stay out of Russell Westbrook's wallet. Think of it as building blocks. Think of it as Legos. You know, you have 100 Legos with which to build your castle. Well, you've got 70 million Legos tied up in, you know, building, you know, half of a castle. And then you have this other 40 million Legos to build the other half of the castle. But those Legos are just scattered in a pile somewhere in another room. And now you don't have any other Legos to build your castle.
Yeah. No, but, like, I just felt like last night there was a bit of, not even a regression, because he still continued to do this. But you just saw the downside of having Russell Westbrook on your team, where, like, even, okay, 2 for 14, like, sure, there are some stars that will have some rough shooting nights like that. Like, not LeBron. LeBron had a bad shooting night last night. He still put up 34, 7, and 6. Like, LeBron is just, you know, such a unique guy. But I think with Russ, it's like, okay, so sure, 2 for 14. But the context of the 2 for 14, I think, is important, because he took so many bad shots at momentous parts of the game. So you have the second quarter. The Kings are going on this run. Lakers are up 14 with a few minutes left. Kings go on this run to end the quarter. And Russ takes a pull-up three. Bad shot. Kings go back to transition score. End of the third quarter. The Kings have this monster run. Go from, again, trailing by double digits or around double digits to taking a near double-digit lead. And it's this really important stretch of the game. And what does Russell Westbrook do? Dribbles up, takes a pull-up three-pointer with 18 seconds left on the shot clock. Kings are up 6 at that point. I think there's around 40 seconds left when he takes it. He's trying to go for a 2-for-1, which in theory is good, but not when you're a 28% three-point shooter. Kings go back down, score. They go into the fourth, up 11. And then end of the game, Lakers are down 4. They run a really weird play. I don't really know what exactly they were looking for. It was basically Russ ISOing, and then Malik Monk tried to set a screen from him. Like, nothing really happens, and Russ takes a wide-open 3 because the Kings want him to shoot. With 6 seconds left on the shot clock, misses that. And it's just, that's kind of it, right? Like, you can envision those scenarios happening in the playoffs where the Lakers are playing the Suns. Somehow it's a close game in this hypothetical. And the Suns are just like, all right, Russ, shoot. Like, go ahead, take the 3. And do you have confidence in Russ making that shot? No. And maybe he makes it, like, you know, every once out of every 3 times. But it's just, I feel like we keep seeing these, like, actual scenarios of how high stakes moments can play out for the Lakers. And when Russ is involved, it's rarely positive. And that's been the story of his career. Like, he is historic. I mean, he still put up numbers in the playoffs, but in the biggest moments, he has not come through and, you know, has been a liability when teams can game plan for him. So I just think that's kind of where I'm at, where I think overall he's played better. His shot selection has been better. But last night, there were several key moments where he took really horrible shots. And he tried to justify it after, saying, oh, well, there's 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and that's why I took it, and nothing else was open. But, like, I mean, that's partially on the Lakers. I don't know why they had Russ running that play instead of LeBron, and they could have maybe done something better offensively there. But I also just think, like, Russ settling for a contested or open 3 at any point of a game that's critical, like, it's just bad offense. And to little surprise, he didn't make any of those shots, and it benefited the Kings. And I don't know, just there's something about last night that really was like a tipping point for me, where I think I hit my breaking point with some of this stuff, where I'm like, it sapped my optimism. Like, whatever optimism I had left, I kind of currently have sapped with just the situation. And I've been looking for silver linings, and I feel like I just can't find any.
It's hard to put it much more clearly than that. There's 40 games left in the season. I think you would say that we feel much worse about where the Lakers are right now than we did at this stage last year. There obviously weren't 82 games last year. But, you know, in the middle of the year last year, the Lakers had issues, right? Like, they were really banged up. AD was out. LeBron, you know, ended up missing quite a bit of time with the ankle injury. But I think there was a confidence, even going into the play-in, that the Lakers could make a run, because we had seen it. We had seen them look really good for an extended period of time. They started the year really well. I don't recall the record, but, you know, they were at or near the top of the West. I think they were second in the West when LeBron sprained his ankle, and that was in March. And then the free fall began. And So we'd seen them beat good teams. We'd seen teams struggle with them. We haven't seen the Lakers beat good teams this year. We've seen them beat a couple of good teams when they weren't very good. We saw them beat Memphis at the beginning of the year. We saw them beat Miami when Jimmy Butler didn't play after halftime. We saw them beat Cleveland, kind of early in the year. Dallas without Luka when Austin Reeves hit the three. But the thing about those games is they're good on paper because they're against teams that are, you know, above 500. Those are their only wins against teams above 500. There's one other one that I'm forgetting. But those in context, which one is it?
Charlotte, I think.
Charlotte. In context, yeah. Those games all come with caveats. Either the other team didn't have their star or the Lakers only squeaked by. They don't look like a championship team, Jovan. They haven't looked like a championship team at all this year. And I don't know, I can't think of a situation where we saw a team go from being so completely mediocre at the midpoint of the season to being a championship contender. I mean, like, I'm writing a story about Elgin Baylor right now for our top 75 countdown, and the Lakers made the finals in 1959 with a 33-39 record. There were 8 teams in the league.
Really, the only thing you can hold on to is that part of this team, and there's nothing like actually tangible that you know from the season that we've seen, but it's basically this team won a championship 2 years ago. They have the same head coach, they have the same two best players, and those two best players, when they're at the top of their game, are both top 10 guys that are capable of dominating a series. And you know, we saw that in the 2020 run. We did see stretches of that from LeBron in that Phoenix series. Even AD had some moments before he went down. So like, that is all you can really hold on to, though. You can't hold on to anything that's happened in this season. And I think it's like, if you are, you know, if you have that championship DNA with this roster, you would have, I would like to just see them beat a good team. And it just be like, hey, even if it's like, hey, we made 23s tonight and had like an unrealistic shooting night, like, because it's been like the opposite where it's like, oh, we lost to this team, but like we didn't have this guy and this guy. So like, that's our excuse. It's just a bunch of excuses where like, I want to see them actually like, you know, be greater than the sum of your parts and actually overachieve instead of continuing to underachieve and like go beat some good teams without Anthony Davis. And you know, even with kind of not having your full roster, like if you just lose all those games against good teams, like I don't know. I just think at some point that matters. And maybe that's too reductive and simplistic. And like, you know, we're looking at it the wrong way. But like, to me, I look at their schedule and I do not see really any impressive wins this season. And that to me is discouraging because we're halfway through the season.
Yeah, I mean, their win against Atlanta was impressive. Like, we're talking about a win against an Atlanta team with a losing record as impressive. So you said they need to beat good teams. They're going to have lots of opportunities over the next couple of weeks. If you're still with us, if you've made us this deep in the podcast, you probably already know this. But in the next couple of weeks, the Lakers are going to play the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Heat, the Nets, the 76ers, the Hornets. They're going to play the Clippers. They're going to play the Bucks. They're going to play the Warriors. Then they're going to play the Jazz. They're going to play all those teams between now and the All-Star break. There's only, in that span, there's only a few games against bad teams. Blazers, Knicks, Blazers twice, Hawks, Magic, Pacers. That's it. Everything else is against a team that is damn good. And those are not games the Lakers have been winning. So you're right. They haven't done it. We haven't seen them do it. They're going to have opportunities to do it. There's just no reason to believe. And the reason people do believe in the Lakers, and the reason people like can't close the book on this team, and the reason that I'm guessing that you still can't get very good odds on the Lakers to win the championship, like I need to check what the current lines are, but I bet that the odds aren't that favorable to bet on the Lakers win a championship, is because of LeBron James, and because we've seen LeBron do so much. And we've seen him carry bad teams so deep into the playoffs. We've seen him get to the finals with bad teams. And the conventional wisdom has been, if you have LeBron James, you always have a chance. Here's the problem, Jovan. 2 of the last 3 years, we've seen the Lakers have LeBron James and not win a playoff series. So I do think the logic of, oh, they have LeBron, that's enough, has been proven incorrect, at least with the Lakers. So I think some of that confidence has to have faded. So it's a bleak time. It's been bleak most of this season. You know, there will be things along the way that, you know, we we talk about that are maybe more positive. There will be wins, we assume, along the way, but we are not at that point of the year right now. So on that just really uplifting note, I am going to bid adieu to you and you and you. Jovan, thank you for joining us after traveling back from Sacramento. Great story about Russell Westbrook that touches on all the stuff that we've been talking about here today, coming off that Kings game. They do play again on Saturday in Denver. I will be there. And then Jovan and I will both be back east for that big road trip. So we'll be coming to you again and again. Thank you for following along with the Forum Club, reading our stories on The Athletic. And also, if I have not plugged it yet, Jovan, I need to do it now. Stargazing on the NBA show from The Athletic. Jovan talking to some of the most creative minds, influencers, working in and around the NBA. Stargazing with Jovan Buha. Wherever you get your podcast, wherever you get this podcast. Thank you for listening.